Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Joining the Mac Group, by Bruce Horn. Time frame, September 1981. In the spring of 1981, I was 21 years old and just about to graduate from Stanford. I had been working at least part-time, and often full-time during the summers, at Xerox PARC in the Learning Research Group for the last 8 years. The people at PARC were legendary, and I'd felt extraordinarily lucky to be able to work with many of them. It was a tremendous learning experience, and I'd had the chance to work on a variety of exciting projects throughout the years. My most recent project had been the Note Taker, a portable small talk machine with a bitmap touchscreen display, mouse and keyboard, stereo sound, and dual 8086 processors. My job was to help out on the bytecode interpreter, to write the I/O processor routines, and basically to keep enough of the Note Taker prototypes running so that they could be used for demos to management. The Note Taker hardware had been created by Doug Fairburn, a gifted hardware and chip designer who had recently left Xerox PARC to start a new company, VLSI Technology Incorporated, or VTI. I had been working closely with Larry Tesler on the Note Taker. Larry was an amazing guy. He had invented the modeless text editing engine for Smalltalk, modeled on his Gypsy editor, and would wear a t-shirt with the slogan, "Don't mode me in," around the lab. He was also famous for writing a piece of software that would coordinate flashcards at Stanford football games to provide spectators across the stadium with animated bitmap graphics. One evening, Larry and I went out for dinner to a local pizza parlor in El Camino in Palo Alto. While we were waiting for the pizza, Larry said, "Bruce, I'm thinking of leaving PARC." "How can you leave PARC?" I was incredulous. PARC was the mecca of computer science. We often said, only half-jokingly, that 80 of the 100 best computer scientists in the world were in residence at PARC. I could walk down the hall and wander into the offices of people like Alan Kay, the leader of the Learning Research Group, where many of today's user interface innovations were first created, Chuck Geschk and John Warnock, who later founded Adobe, and Ed McCrate, the inventor of bee trees, and they all made time to answer my questions, even if they were from a geeky and gangly teenager like me. The Learning Research Group and the rest of PARC were full of the brightest and most creative people on the planet. Why would anyone want to leave? Larry said that he was ready for a new challenge, ready to try to get some of the PARC ideas out into the world. We had been talking with Apple recently and had given a demo of Smalltalk to Steve Jobs. Although Larry didn't say anything right away, it turns out he had already been interviewing at Apple and was soon to join the Lisa team. When I finally graduated in mid-1981, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Working at Xerox PARC had been a dream come true, and I'd lived that dream for more than a third of my life. But I thought that maybe I should get out into the real world. Xerox PARC was so ahead of its time. We had Alto and Dorado workstations with mice, large portrait-sized bitmap displays, what-you-see-is-what-you-get text editors, graphics editors, interactive object-oriented programming environments with comprehensive class libraries, local area networks, laser printers, email, and so on, that taking a normal job in the computer industry was guaranteed to be a letdown. But in talks with Adele Goldberg, one of the senior members of the Learning Research Group, and my good friend Rachel Rutherford, I realized that I really did need to try something new, that I'd regret it if I didn't leave the comfortable and familiar environment of PARC. I began interviewing at a variety of companies in the Valley. Most were forgettable. And then I remembered Larry Tesler at Apple and about Doug Fairburn at VTI, so I contacted them both. Apple was interesting. Larry was working on the Lisa, which was starting to look like a real computer, but for some reason it didn't appeal to me. At one point, though, Larry realized that I'd be a better fit in the Macintosh group and introduced me to Andy Hertzfeld. Andy, the soul of the Mac software group, showed me some demos that were so amazing that I somehow thought that they didn't really need me, that the software was almost done. But I was impressed and intrigued and mulled it over. Meanwhile, I went to interview at VTI. The people there were wonderful. I'd be working with folks I knew and respected, and Doug even offered me a $15,000 signing bonus, a huge amount of money for a recent college graduate. I'd be working on advanced chip design tools, a new area for me, and it would be an interesting challenge, so I accepted the job. That was Thursday. On Friday evening, I got a phone call. "Bruce, it's Steve. What do you think about Apple?" It was Steve Jobs. "Well, Steve, Apple's cool, but I accepted a job at VTI. "You did what? Forget that. You get down here tomorrow morning. We have a lot more things to show you. Be at Apple at 9 a.m. Steve was adamant. I thought I'd go down, go through the motions, and then tell him that I'd made up my mind and was going to VTI. Steve switched on the reality distortion field full force. I met with seemingly everyone on the Mac team, from Andy to Rod Holt to Jerry Manick to the other software engineers and back to Steve. 2 full days of demos, drawings of the various designs, marketing presentations, I was overwhelmed. On Monday, I called Doug Fairburn at VTI and told him I had changed my mind. I was going to join Apple, where we would change the world with a little computer called the Macintosh.